joining us in studio, back from her holiday, Dina Diamond. A very good morning. How are you?
I am very good. Very good.
Are you a neat desk person or a messy desk person? I'm going to go neat.
I have to admit, I'm a neat desk person.
I had no doubt.
I am. I can't work in chaos.
Can't you? No. I think we need chaos.
No, chaos does help. It affects my feng shui.
My
ability to like function optimally.
You know, maybe that's why I like doing some work in coffee shops, because I like the chaos of the noise, of the people, of the unpredictability of it. No, funny, when I sit by myself in a neat, perfect place and perfect quiet.
You don't know what to do with yourself.
I feel like Kate Middleton.
No.
Okay, I don't.
Do you? Right. What shoes are you wearing?
Right, obviously Louboutins, because she's the only person in the world that can walk in them.
Yes.
Christian Louboutins, I'm sure.
And Melania Trump, who wore them to...
Yes, as one does, to a flood...
Hurricane flood. Katrina, yes.
Or Harvey, or something.
Sorry. Yeah, it wasn't Katrina.
No, I think Katrina was before their time.
It was.
Yeah,
some
I think
other
she
woman.
Was still in Slovakia at the time. So, indeed, time is 12 minutes past the hour of 7. Did you have a good holiday before we go to traffic?
Fantastic holiday. I just can't believe it's all done and we've starting again.
Yeah. And
why?
School.
Why?
School starts. Yeah. You know, when I heard a conversation yesterday in my house about the length of a school skirt, I actually wanted to go into the bathroom, close the door and just throw up.
But it's a real thing. It's a thing.
I believe so. But just that conversation. And I thought, well, here we go. 2019 has started because we're talking about the length of a school skirt.
Exactly.
You know, this is going to be probably the first of 400 discussions about a school skirt.
At least.
The length of
At
a school
least.
Skirt that we are going to be having from now on.
The question is, who won that conversation?
Well, it was, I don't know, I was locked in the bathroom. So we're not talking about school skirts on the marketing report, are we?
No, but it is a thing.
It is a,
If you lean forward though, you can always have a longer skirt, don't you find?
That's the thing, like I remember those conversations and like, so the teacher would be like, no, 4 fingers, it needs to be 4 fingers above, my knees. I'd be like, but your hands are big, like your fingers are fat, so obviously.
It was the diplomatic way of saying it.
And like, honestly, and then it's like, does it need to be 4 fingers from the front or at the back? Because obviously at the back it's going to be shorter.
Depends on your knees.
On your bum.
Alrighty.
But I must tell you though, I actually really think they should do away with school skirts. They should have pinafores, you know, those dresses.
Yes.
Because it makes it far harder to manipulate. The school skirt can roll as many times.
Well, that's the problem with it.
Or you can roll it.
Exactly.
Yes,
that's what I'm saying.
Exactly.
Well, hypothetically, so it could just roll.
Mm. Yeah, we've had this conversation. You know, not necessarily about school skirt, and I'll say to my daughter, that dress is too short. And all of a sudden, like, she's like hunched down and walking on knees. No, it's not. It's fine. But you know that the minute she's out the door and she stands straight, boom, that skirt's, yeah. Anyway, it's, you know, when I just heard that school skirt discussion yesterday.
You were out of there. That's not my department.
I thought I'm not ready for this. I am not ready for another year of school. Not yet.
So you surreptitiously excused yourself from the conversation.
Yeah, not so subtle. I ran screaming, just saying, like,
well, you play your running song while you ran away.
I ran yesterday, excuse me.
Oh, real running.
Yeah,
did you?
I did the Discam 5 kilometer dash.
Did you?
Yeah. I even got the t-shirt that says dash.
Did you wear, I was out yesterday and I did see people walking around the shopping center with their number. Did you have your number on as you continued to go out in the morning?
No, of course. In fact, I only took it off this morning. How else do people know that you've run?
Exactly. You keep it pinned to your
shirt.
Yes,
of course. Yeah. And then I took it off this morning.
I saw that and I was like, really?
No, rubbish. People walk around a shopping mall after a run with their race number on it.
No, I was like.
In case they do what, a spot check to see if you've registered for Woolworths. Like, what is that?
I was like, oh, how are you? No, I've just done the run. I'm like, you don't say.
Right, but that was last week. You don't think maybe you could now take it off. You don't think you're ready for it. Is that what we call marketing ourselves?
Yes, indeed. Mm. It's basically, yes, if you can't tell the story, you know, just show it.
Exactly. Leave little.
Be the story.
Leave little doubt. All right. So just in the interest of full disclosure, I want to tell you that I did veto the topic for this morning. Dina Diamond wanted to talk about the marketing of Clifton. Through the whole non-vegan approach to Clifton Beach.
Dolly the sheep.
Dolly the sheep. or Polly. I never knew which it was. But I said, no, we've done the sheep thing.
I know. I see. I just got back. So I feel like I haven't.
You haven't debriefed.
Yes, I haven't debriefed. I haven't.
It was quite traumatic for people in Cape Town, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, because there were people like, there was blocking traffic. So, you know, if you've got enough traffic to get to the beach and you're more traffic because they're guys in red overalls.
Right.
Creating additional life.
Well, one wants to wear an overall if one's carrying a sheep.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Especially a red one, because then, once you've slaughtered it, it's not so apparent. No,
but the crazy thing is, like, on that day, when they had people getting, like, literally being told the beach is being closed and everything, a friend of mine who is whiter than white, blonder than blonde, got told me that she'd been kicked off the beach. And this was the first I'd heard of it.
So can I tell you the interesting thing is both Zanatti and Tanya Curry on Friday, when we discussed this, said, no, they believe it was a racial incident. So,
rubbish.
No, wait.
Sorry.
So, okay, that was a little aggressive, I thought.
Sorry. And then, as I haven't debriefed.
Right, clearly. And here we are actually talking about this, that which I wasn't going to talk about.
Yes.
And I said to Zanatti, but white people and black people were asked to be removed from
on
the beach.
Beach.
And Zanatti said, really? I had no idea. And you know what Tanya Curry said?
Yeah.
Now, she's a media monitor.
Mm-hmm.
She said, I had no idea.
Oh, you're kidding.
So the narrative out there was that it was a targeted approach to black people only. And of course that would have been a racial incident.
Absolutely.
I would have been slaughtering my own sheep. I just wouldn't have been able to carry it. That was because I've got a lower back.
Absolutely. And then how about those people that have been tanning for 3 weeks that don't know which color spectrum they're in?
I mean, so true.
It is true.
Because you can be color fluid.
You could be color fluid
right,
in Cape Town.
Right.
After 3 weeks.
Right.
Of extensive work.
Right. Exactly. With every Sun 5 protection factor. So anyway, yes.
Baby oil.
So it's interesting.
I actually did not hear that.
Yes. Yeah. So I think that's why there was this massive
response
and I think misunderstanding, because it wasn't. Whether it was right or wrong, and I'm not arguing whether that security company should have been there. You know, I think that beaches are sensitive.
Anyway, I'll tell you why. Because all those people who live on those beaches, they've got easy access to the beach. There's stairs. They've got like three stairs from their swimming pool, from their house.
Yes.
Their whatever million dollar homes, actually in this case.
Yeah, exactly.
And they have to use private security to prevent people from coming onto their homes. So it's not that they're there. They weren't there by a call of the police. They're there because they are paid for by those people who own those homes.
Right, except that...
for their own personal security.
That's absolutely fine in order to protect your home. But can you then go onto a public space and say to people, please leave the beach? I don't think so.
So apparently the local police did ask them, and it wasn't mass amounts of private security.
No, it was a few dotted individuals. Yes,
but the fact what you're saying, I didn't hear that show on Friday, but I actually am shocked that you didn't know that it was every single person who was asked to leave that beach. It was not at all targeted. In fact, if anything, that beach is probably predominantly a white beach, and every single person on that beach was asked to leave. Yes.
Isn't that interesting, though?
It's very interesting.
Because that's how the narrative completely changes.
Yeah.
And you get a completely different response.
Where we know that the security company is wrong, but now this takes away the racial.
There was nothing racial about it at all. And everyone is allowed to be on that beach. There is no, and first of all, there's never been, like, since the fall of apartheid, there has never been any
racial
to anyone being allowed onto
the beach. No, but I do understand that there's a history of it.
Yes, and there's a sensitivity.
And that's something we can't forget. But it doesn't mean that incident was a racial incident.
Absolutely. And that's what is fascinating, is that the media storm around it, the fact that Zanatti and Tanya, who literally
are two people who are very plugged in to what's going on in the world. So you're not talking about people who are clueless. You know, so I found that very, very interesting.
Yeah, and also the person who told me that they'd been basically kicked off the beach said we were on the beach, and I've never heard this about, like, and that's why from a Cape Town point of view, which has always been seen as, like, relatively safe, the beach is there. This was quite shocking, because you're saying she was sitting on the beach, her brother was here from London, and all of a sudden the police come up to her, police, not the private security guard, and they say very, very discreetly, they say, listen, there are sort of bad influences on the beach, there are gangs that are on the beach, and they've actually stabbed like lifeguards, and there's incidents happening. We are closing the beach. Please slowly just pack up your stuff. Don't rush. Don't cause panic. Just pack up your stuff and leave the beach. And she said she couldn't find her slip-slop, and she said, I'm not leaving the beach until I find my slip-slop.
Of course, right. You know, you pay for brother, those bananas, yeah.
Exactly. And her brother from London was in a panic state, and he said, we are leaving immediately. She goes, I'm not leaving without my Aviana.
You see, you can tell who still lives in South Africa.
Exactly. And who the foreigners are out.
They're gone. Yeah.
Exactly. But what she did say is that they were going to every single person, and they were she said she was actually quite impressed with the manner that they came up to her, and they did exit everyone off the beach. It was very controlled, very calm. And so when I heard, then I saw the whole thing about this, and then it just exploded. And what I was fascinated about is that the media can spin it to a point where there literally is no reality in the media, and it goes global, and it causes panic, it causes
loss,
an outlook on South
loss,
Africa.
Exactly.
Where again, where you talked about the water crisis last year, there were far less people in Cape Town this year.
No
it was
question.
A lot quieter,
mm-hmm.
and that again also sort of augmented by the media chaos. And then you get a story like this where there is really no truth by the media, and you think, how did that happen? And then it's such a bad image for Cape Town and for South Africa. It has a huge impact on tourism, on industry, on economy, and it just goes unchecked.
So I wonder, because I do think the media was largely responsible for the story.
Yes.
And as I discussed on the show, and in fact I wrote another article on it, News 24 wouldn't even, and another publication would not even publish an article that I wrote that was sort of tongue-in-cheek around this incident, because they were so afraid. And what made me realize is that the minute there's even a suggestion of racism, nobody's going back and saying, hold on, is it?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the media's job, is to go back and say, is this racist? If it is racist, we are going to condemn it and fight it and deal with it in its strongest form.
Absolutely.
But if it isn't, then we're not going to. And I think that the media was irresponsible in this regard.
Absolutely. And again, it was such a small incident. Everyone, like, I mean, we were in Cape Town for quite a while.
Mm.
And everyone was like, oh my gosh, how's the beach and everything? The next day, that beach was full. It was packed. You couldn't, there was no sand to be seen on Port Beach.
It is a 7:29 chatting to Dina Diamond. We are meant to be speaking.
Sorry.
About the success of Airbnb.
I feel better now, though.
But I feel like, yeah, we did have to do this for Dina. And so we did. Let's play. Which line is it? Anyway, Dina, do you know a new game?
No, I don't.
Oh, I see that. You're like looking at
me. I'm so out of it.
Right. So it's instead of the riddle,
yes.
What we are doing is I'm giving our listeners a quote from a movie or a book or a fairy tale or the Bible, and they have to tell me where it is from.
Oh, I like that.
All right. So this morning, I'm going to give you a clue. It does come from a child's movie. If you walk in the footsteps of a stranger, you'll learn new things you never knew. If you walk in the footsteps of a stranger, you'll learn new things you never knew. So Dina, we were talking about Airbnb and how they did their marketing.
Yes. So that actually, for the size of the company and for their revenue, because basically, if we look at marketing spend, we often look at it as a percentage of revenue, and often with the big companies, it generally is about 5-7%, and with smaller companies, actually a little bit more because they have to spend a bit more to get a bit more noticed. And in Airbnb's case, their actual revenue was $2.6 billion, and with a net being $100 million, which is a fortune. I mean, it's just massive. But it just shows that their margins are very small, but their marketing spend was a fraction of that. That was like about $63 million. And so if you look at that, they've actually underspent. And the way they've done that is very cleverly. They've used what they are. They're a social media platform, basically. And they've used influencers. They've done partnerships. They've got, in fact, they even had a massive, like, party in 2015. They hosted a floating house on the Thames River in London with a variety of related events with the hashtag floating house party. And attendees were basically encouraged to live stream, take pictures and splash the whole night over social media. And resultant coverage that was that they got 340 press pieces in the UK alone, and which translated into 70,000 page hits, 10,000 new users, and more than 200 million social media impressions. I mean, so they're super, super clever about that.
But in some way, they are marketing. They're just marketing it in a completely different way because they're still paying for these events. They're paying for...
Oh, absolutely.
So,
yes.
So they're just putting their marketing money effectively in another area and allowing it to organically
grow,
evolve, rather than saying, right, I'm going to take out adverts to the value of X amount and advertorials and things like that.
Absolutely. And not only that, but they also, the way they just market themselves, first of all, they're not marketing like a normal product. They are the biggest real estate broker, basically, and they own no real estate.
Mm.
I mean, that's a massive concept.
Yeah, I guess it's the same as Uber.
Yeah, exactly. The biggest car service, and they own no cars. And as well as Facebook, the biggest social media platform, and they actually create no content.
It's all user-provided content.
It's all user-provided content. And they've leveraged off the user providers. And also, if you look at, I mean, when people stay somewhere, they will rate how their experience was. And then if someone else sees that, then they're going to sort of say, okay. And that, and actually, user-generated content is the most relied upon because advertising is seen as, you know, a bit sort of made up, a bit embellished.
Yeah, but that's so interesting. You're so right. If you just joined us, time 7:40. About to go 7:41. I'm chatting to Dina Diamond, and we're speaking about Airbnb, how they've done their marketing. So, you know, Avi Meir, he's an Israel advocate. Mm-hmm. He was in Cape Town this year. He got a few days off, and he decided that's it. He's going south. And he came to Cape Town. He got an Airbnb. And it turns out that the person that he hired the place from, the host, it was their first experience as a host on Airbnb. Mm-hmm. And it was very important to this bloke to create a good impression and to get a good review.
Mm-hmm.
He fetched him from the airport.
No way.
he offered it's to like put things sport. In the fridge for him. He took him to Stellenbosch to see the wine.
Oh, no, you are kidding.
How funny is that?
You know, there's such a thing as a super host. I think he got
this is a super
duper host.
I said to Avi Meir that, you know, this bro, he's not going to survive through till June. He's going to be so exhausted. But
he will get great ratings.
But he will get great ratings, absolutely.
Yeah. And then also the most amazing thing about Airbnb is that it actually does, it transcends just the brand experience because it's completely experiential. And it literally is... that person's total life that you're actually engaging with. So when it actually does transcend just the product, it becomes your experience. It becomes your holiday even. It can affect your like experience over that period. And exactly now, as you say, with a super host. So I don't know if people know how it works. If anyone isn't on Airbnb, I mean, I think it's completely changed the nature of where you go, how you travel. It's actually enabled you to travel. And that's why it doesn't even need to be marketed because people, it talks to what they want. It talks to how they want to be and it actually simplifies their lives. And anytime you've got that, it actually becomes self-perpetuating in terms of marketing. So, where you have beautiful images, and that's what they also do. They make you upload images of your place and you can actually feel like you're getting like a real view of it. And then the people sort of affirm it through their recommendations and all the rest. And not only that, but you can communicate with your host. You can become besties by the time you get to their place. And, from a marketing perspective, they've definitely sort of like pulled in on that. They've created communities and they've also got brand loyal people. So once you've stayed at Airbnb and you feel like you've saved that amount of money, it's very rare that I think that you would go back to a hotel.
And also, if you're going to revisit the same place, there's a good chance you're going to want to go back to a place.
Absolutely.
Because there was no doubt by the end of Avi Meir's few days in Cape Town, his week in Cape Town, you know, he wants to make this an annual event and he wants to go back to the same place.
Yeah, I just don't know if he's going to be getting that same
service. No, he will never, ever see that service again. Not ever. Very, very interesting. And in fact, Baruch said something interesting as well. He says it's almost what Donald Trump does. she creates noise and hype before something becomes news. It doesn't, you know, it's almost that you create this environment for it.
Mm-hmm. And also you feel like you can go anywhere. You feel honestly like the world's an oyster, and you know that you actually are going to be getting a good deal because you can compare, you can put different requirements in, and it brings up so many options that you actually feel like you're the winner. You know, people, whenever they engage with a brand, if they feel like they've got a good deal and they feel like they've had a good experience, they're going to become advocates of that brand.
Well, it's interesting. Unsan says there's a Netflix show where five Airbnb hosts host each other and compete for better ratings. It's based in Australia, of course.
Oh,
it is.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, of course it's Australia.
Of course it's Australia.
Yeah, exactly. And then they go and report each other to the police for parking violations. That's apparently the climax of the whole show. Good morning, team. Great show. What about the petrol increase in Zimbabwe? That is from Rodney. Rodney Yaznati will be reporting on that, no doubt. It's 7:45. Before we cross to Anthony Reich, I want to say thank you to Dina Diamond. As always, welcome back. Things feel so much better now that you're back in studio on a Monday. Thank you. And we look forward to seeing you next week. Before Zanati forgets, can we please wrap up the sports question, Zanati? Which boxer inflicted Muhammad Ali's first defeat in his professional career? All right, taking a look at some of your answers. Good morning. Neil says George Foreman. Mike C says Joe Frazier. The answer, according to Louis Karpus, because I don't have a cooking clue, is in fact Joe Frazier in 1971. So well done to everybody who got it right. It is 7:46.